so let's roll on. All right, so there are two more key technologies we want to do. Did you stop the audio?
Yeah.
I should notice about the audio. I guess I found one advantage of this mode of delivery is that it automatically logs which URL I'm on at a particular time. So when I'm giving my course this semester, I record the audio to disk, and then I convert it to so-called real audio format, and then cut it up according to the URL that it's attached to, so that you then get at the end of all this these files with my words attached to them. Anyway, all right. So VRML is obviously important, because the world is three-dimensional, and VRML describes three dimensions. So that's got to make it important. There are two versions of VRML, 1.0 and 2.0. 1.0 is essentially the ability to navigate through static scenes. 2.0 is a fully interactive 3D world. Next file. So we have some later examples which are illustrated here. There's some obvious natural applications to three-dimensional terrain rendering using VRML, which is shown in this insert here. Next file. We probably have too many of these. Let's see what this particular file. You know, this one is must be a huge file. All right, so this illustrates something we built for the teachers which actually has not been deployed yet. So this is meant to be a model of how, of a particular way we could sort of deploy technology in education. So this is meant to be New York State, the interactive journey. So you can get from the web 30-meter geographical data. You can get the elevation data. So you can build a three-dimensional world, which you'll see later overlays on. And then the idea is that we can give anybody, but in particular we can give the school districts the 3D world of their particular region they're interested in, and then they can add information to that world and annotate it. So it's obviously the commercial applications are some 3D yellow pages, but here the idea will be take cultural and other types of nifty information about your world, and then you can place it in the 3D world and navigate through it to do some nice web-based pervasive technology thing. So if you click that red house, so VRML has clickable abilities, and if you click that red house, you will actually learn about Herkimer Home, which is one of the local cultural places near Syracuse. Next, that's just an enhancement of that. All right, so next, that's just some tutorial we have on VRML. The tutorial teaches you how to build that nifty car at the top there, uses that car as an example of VRML. Next file. So this is an interesting example which we just built and has some relevance for scientific computing. So here you have some 3D terrain of New York State, and we have here, we've taken a weather simulation and superimposed that on top of that scene. So we've taken 3D terrain, 3D scientific visualization, superimposed them, and now these are viewable using standard web technology in your favorite home or wherever you want to look at it. So this I find is an interesting way of delivering the results of HPCC simulations to the world. Next file. Well, I know it's not standard at the moment, I agree. So here's another, it's an enhanced web technology, but it's sort of illustrative of what web technology ought to be. Next file. Yeah, that, Marigany did that recently. It is in the online version. The online version of this note has all these files. This was only finished recently. There's also an MPAC handout, which we have, which has all that all those particular information in it, because it has our latest work in it, which includes that. Maybe you can bring some handouts. And could you bring some of the, there's a one by Wojtek and me on Webflow. Maybe you can bring that, Marek. I have some of them. Yes. You're lucky it hasn't changed more than it did. I've been on the traveling so much, I only had a day or so to change it on Saturday. Normally, I change things more than this. But sure, you're probably pleased with that. All right. So again, it's interesting to see how fast this field has grown. Here we have beautiful 3D standards, which was first thought of in spring of 94. So I see this as a rapidly moving area. Next file. BRML is based on the so-called Open Inventor ASCII format. Next file. And if this is some standard, BRML defines some standard hierarchical graphics graph with where a set of predefined objects, and you can generate general objects through an ability to specify polygons. Next file. All right, so here is your hello world. It's not three-dimensional, so we can't tell you how to do hello world, but we can tell you how to do something simple. So supposing you wanted to draw a cube next to a sphere, you would, here is the five lines you'd have to transmit from your server to your browser to get one cube next to one sphere. You would say cube, and that defines you a unit cube. Obviously, this particular cube has, you can specify lots of parameters of that cube if you wanted to. Then you can do a transformation, which in this case is by three units in the x direction, and then you say sphere, and that's it. And you transmit that down there, and the browser, the VRML browser, renders those commands, giving you a cube next to a sphere. You notice that our tutorial car had spherical wheels. The reason it had spherical wheels is that the sphere is a primitive in VRML, and so it's much easier to build spherical wheels than it is to build real wheels. But you could build real wheels in a more complicated fashion. Next file. So if you wanted to make yellow, if you wanted to change everything to yellow, you just use the so-called material node, and you specify the diffuse color followed by the RGB designation 110 gives you everything being yellow. The scope of any information is defined by these curly brackets, but this material is outside, is on the same level as cube and sphere. It refers to both the cube and sphere. Next file. And finally, but not quite finally, this shows how we could use a hierarchical fashion. We can essentially put curly brackets around cube and material to insist that only the cube be yellow. So that's it. So it seems there's some relatively, you know, so originally this was designed to be able to allow your F-16 internet game to talk to your M-1 internet game and allow the tank to shoot down the F-16 because they're using universal 3D descriptions. But this general concept of a universal 3D language is, in my opinion, much deeper than that. It has relevance to sort of industry product specification efforts, things like PDES and STEP, which I don't know a lot about. And it, I believe it's, although the implementation can be critiqued at the moment, this is a very important concept because the world is three-dimensional. Next file. I think I'm going to skip over most of the next one. So this shows that this picture was not done now in Syracuse. This shows how we could texture map and put a pretty picture on our sphere. What I wanted to briefly mention now is something which I'm going to start actually here. This one is on the web. I'm not showing it from this version because we already know these foils are screwed up. They're too small for this presentation. But this is an insert, and I would claim that this area has made substantial progress over the last few months. Although this is not the right foil. This is the one we had already. So an enormously important activity of the human race is called collaboration or interaction or communication or something. And I see the next set of a large number of commercial and other types of activities aimed at implementing, using web technologies, collaboration. I mentioned my daughter's Christmas present, I think she wants is, not only does she want to learn Java, we want her own chat group, so she wants to collaborate. So the industry standard collaboration, at least at that age, is currently text-based chat groups. But there's an enormous amount of activity in far more sophisticated types of interaction. And my belief is this is actually an important area for everybody to be working on, and I know, for instance, DOE, I think, has a big effort in this area to link the various labs together, because collaboration, you know, this is another example where I think we should contribute as a community, because collaboration is different in different worlds. Namely, the virtual birthday party is going to be different from the virtual university and different from the virtual research lab. And so it's pretty important for the different communities to try to understand the right collaboration model for their application. The teacher-student, the tutorial interaction, the consultant interaction, the peer-to-peer researcher interaction, they're all going to be somewhat different and require different capabilities and optimization. So I see a lot of important activities in this area. We've already mentioned CareWeb as an example of these so-called bridge collaborations, where effectively a database, in our case Oracle, provides a common point of reference for people to act, to link in an asynchronous fashion. Now, more exciting are these, let me do one which I'm not going to do because it's too advanced, the so-called televirtual environment. So that takes VRML 2.0, puts in avatars, which are your symbolic representation, and basically builds a full virtual world so that you don't actually realize that you haven't got out of bed, but really everything is simulated. So televirtuality is a full 3D simulation of a computer-generated world, which is what VRML 2.0 was formerly aimed at. So that's a far-out dream, or possibly it's stupid. But the near-term, near-term opportunity are these typically Java-based, Wojtek calls mirror collaboratories, where people's views and actions are synchronized. Events, whether they be text-based chats or video images or what have you, are broadcast in real time. The views don't really have to be identical. They just have to be generated by identical data, but you could generate a different URL on one client if you wanted to, because you have software that allows you to do anything. But that's, the actions are synchronized, because, for instance, we are offering this I mean, a lot of these foils here come from a fall semester certificate in Internet Systems that we're going to offer is a distance education course next March. And the way we're going to do that is we're going to put everything on a CD-ROM, not on this paper. We're going to use this Tango technology I will mention, which will broadcast the URL, which will then fetch it, not from MPEG, but from the CD-ROM. So you'll have a loosely knit, so that's an example of a different action. The action will be go to your local disk and fetch the data so that you can get very good graphics, but without high, so over a 8.8 kilobaud modem. All right. So let me just mention Habanero. Habanero is the most famous of these systems. You don't have this in your pay, so yeah, this only. So essentially, this is a bunch of typically Java clients hooked up by permanent channels to a Java server. That Java server has a session manager that ensures that each of these clients receives data. So it does multicast and broadcast as appropriate. So this technology at its core is relatively simple. It's just, and it's done using Java because of the ability to have this integrated in programming environment, and it's clearly far more naturally done with the same technology on the client and the server, because you also will eventually want to have multiple servers. Habanero and the other such systems have APIs which effectively allow you to link any application or, in some restrictions, any application to such a server. So a good example I'm familiar with is ABS. ABS has an API which allows you to link filters to an ABS network. Same here. You have a particular API. You have to essentially a particular method to allow yourself to receive and send information from your applications. So that's defined by Habanero. So Habanerizing an application involves building, looking at their API and building the necessary input and output subroutines or methods or whatever you want to call them. So here's a total Mac. So here's an example of so one of the first things Habanero did was take Michael's Visible Human applet and Habanero-ize it, which meant, again, a teacher could be sitting there, which would be a master, could be navigating the virtual human applet. That same navigation would be reproduced on every client attached to the Habanero server, so that you would then have a natural teacher, distributed teacher-pupil model. So this is extremely important for putting universities out of business. I mean, they might survive unless we can implement this, but we can do it. It's quite straightforward. And so this will allow us to fully implement the virtual university with great effectiveness. So you have checkers. They all have whiteboards of various types, text chats, graphing. They do have, of course, ordinary web pages. You can spawn existing web pages. So those are all. If any of you are familiar with the concept of DSI or SimNet, I mean the distributed simulation world, which is effectively the general event-driven simulation, human-in-the-loop type application. This technology, in my opinion, is a very wonderful technology for that world, because essentially here we have a session manager managing in some relatively straightforward way various clients. Yes? Well, Java is married to Corba. Java itself is married to Corba, so the answer is yes. The industry is doing. The industry would not let you get away without marrying this to Corba. Of course, Corba and Java and the web have sort of overlaps. They're not sort of unique, clean divisions. But obviously, you have to have the Corba link. And there is a Java-Corba connection, just as there's a Java database connection. So I believe that this type of application generalizes very well to link simulations and collaboration with people in the loop, computational steering, all those applications that we've done very well by generalizing the session manager to not just manage client people working together, but people and computer programs working together, because this is basically an event-driven, event-driven execution model. All right, let's go back to the foil, which was, you see, we made NCSA wipe out Marek by overriding him. So this is MPAC has a system we built actually as the front back end to the this command and control application, which has, we believe, has greater capabilities than Habanero in that it's much easier to link arbitrary applications to it. So we also think Tango is easier to pronounce than Habanero. Next file. So this is, so just to show that we also can have a ridiculous number of applications. We have a ridiculous number of applications. You see there a teacher, a physics teacher, using a neural net applet. This one you will not find in. This just came out. You'll see a teacher, there example of, so there's the command and control, the commander interacting synchronously with the troops. The one on the bottom left is actually a teaching tool for neural nets, where again the teacher would enter the letter, the applet then interprets the letter, and again this technology allows that applet to be mimicked on every one of the student's desks. And then you have various other such resources. This you have obviously electronic mail, chatbot, whiteboard, audio, and eventually video. It's actually not obvious that you need video, in that you can do almost everything you want seemingly with audio, but it's not clear whether you need video in these systems. That's the type of experimentation that one needs to do. Next file. So where are we now? All right. So that's the end of what I wanted to say about collaboration, which I think is the most exciting area. I think collaboration is so pervasively important, and it, I mean, even in, you know, when you're doing, let's say, it's the basis of, say, consulting at a supercomputer center. I mean, it's really pervasively a relevant technology, in my opinion. All right. We've already mentioned many times databases. This you can do for relational databases, object databases. I probably forgot to mention that VRML database, all that information with that database was stored in Alastra, which is an object database, which was then web linked. So that's, if you're thinking about objects placed in a 3D world, it's more natural to generate that, store that in a database. Next file. I'm going to go skip over these things. We've got too much stuff here. So this rather moth-eaten looking file here is just a screen dump of the Carrier Corporation homepage or a couple level deep. Their entire catalog we put into an Oracle database for them. So we built them the PL/SQL to manipulate that database. Somebody else produced the data. So when you go to the Carrier page, none of their product data is sitting on an HTML page. It's all sitting in fields in a standard Oracle database. HTML is generated on the fly. So I see that as the obvious way all product information will be done by shopping organizations in the future. You will not have static HTML. You'll sit it in a database and get with a single point of contact the database, and then you'll generate a wide variety of HTML pages with the latest price increases and the latest offers all suitably generated for that dynamic page. I should also point out Carrier is sort of nostalgic for me because I once tried to give them a talk about using parallel computing to design air conditioners. Carrier makes air conditioners. And so I had 5 people at my talk. It was about the most unenthusiastic audience I ever had. And these people were so sad. They said, well, management doesn't care about simulation. and we don't think we're doing very well. It was the most depressing interaction I've ever had. However, they loved it when we said that we could produce a web-based product catalog for them. So that sort of, in a nutshell, describes to you my InfoMail program, which is my industrial outreach program for New York State. I found it relatively difficult to persuade them parallel computing was useful, but I have persuaded them that in many cases that web technology is of great value. Next foil. And that's sort of why MPAC does web technology, not so much parallel computing, because the back-end industrial outreach cares more about web technology. So this file here, which is in your handout, just points out the dimension. We did none of these projects did we do 2 or 3 years ago. They're all happened over the last couple of years just because it is relatively straightforward to build web database linkages. So this is sort of enables you suddenly to use this technology called database technology, which up to now was too expensive and difficult to access. It's now much cheaper, especially on PCs, which is a mass market, and much easier to access. Next file. Alright, so this just tells you this overall architecture, which is sort of trivial. This is how it's done at the moment for WoW. WoW is a nice name, but on the way out, because this is too Oracle specific. So it's extremely simple architecture. You have a web client. The web client sends information, typically through a form, to a web server. The web server has a CGI script, which is essentially a trivial CGI script, which passes, in the case of Oracle, which passes the information onto a database server. These live typically on different computers for security reasons and general infrastructure reasons, though they could run on the same computer, of course. And then in the case of Oracle, Oracle provides a set of PL/SQL. PL/SQL is is a programming language supported by Oracle. It has essentially a set of routines to decode the input form and to generate the HTML. So Oracle provides you the subroutine to read the input and produce the output. And the handouts tell you some examples of how to do it, and there are actually some longer tutorials on the web on my webpage because I taught that in my class. PL/SQL, in my opinion, although I think at one stage PL/SQL maybe still is an important corporate advantage for Oracle, because the future is JDBC, the Java Database Connection, this architecture will not be preserved. Here you have this integrated architecture where the database has the programming in it. JDBC, the programming is sitting in a Java program which then accesses the database. And I think one's bound to use the JDBC architecture because it's vendor neutral, whereas this is vendor specific, albeit a dominant vendor specific approach. So I see this technology like CareWeb and the Carrier, which we built using PL/SQL, it's fine, it will continue to run, but it's not what we'll do 6 months from now. Now it's not quite obvious what you do because we're in transition, but 6 months from now, I'm assuming we'll use JDBC. Next file. Yeah, this is a reasonably interesting file. So what does this mean? So this means this is trying to put everything in context. So I would claim that almost by definition, data ought to live in a database. That may seem obvious, but it's not actually what people usually do. People often use the Unix file system as a database. A good example is most Unix mail systems use the file system as their database, not a database. But I already showed you how carrier data went into a database. So let's go back to our VRML world. We do not want to store that information, particularly as VRML. The VRML is not a storage technology, it's a display technology. It's a set of instructions to render us. So I have a claim that what you want to do is to store your data in the best format for that data in a database. Then you get to the yellow side in your syntax, which is the filter. So then you want to have a filter on the CGI side, CGI script, which accesses the database, and basically adapts something to the data. So what should it do? Well, it originally, for instance, in our VRML example, it produced VRML from that Alustra database. But that was not the right architecture, because what it ought to do is to produce information optimized for the network. So what it should be doing is doing, in that case there, optimal compression technology, stopping the information in the smallest possible space and sending it down that network. So that's where your compression technology goes. Then you roll down the network, and then we have a client-side filter, which in the new implementation of the GIS effectively unpacks the compressed data, produces the VRML, and then hands, finally, VRML, HTML to the browser. So the purpose of this is to point out that these different interfaces have different optimizations. And you want to choose in principle, at least if not in practice, you want to choose the interface at the right point. HTML is not the right way to store data because if we were doing it, well, it sometimes is, but if we're doing it for carrier, that's pretty silly to hardwire carrier's products into HTML pages. That's sort of clumsy. Rather, it's better to view HTML as purely ephemeral thing that gets wraps up the current product information and sends it to the browser. So that would be my claim, systems architecture. Next file. Let me skip these. These are in your handouts. HTTP and HTF are just the Oracle PLSQL routines for processing processing forms and producing HTML. I don't have time to spend much time on this, although this is quite important. That's digital video and audio. This is obviously relevant for collaboration. I'm extremely interested in it, mainly for building this virtual university, which is one of my goals. Wisdom International, I'm trying to set up as an international replacement for universities. But anyway, it's critical, obviously, as part of collaboration to be able to do digital video and audio. And obviously, your future, there's some expectation that your cable systems and TV systems will be delivered using some sort of web technology to your set-top boxes. So there's a huge effort in digital audio and video, which is a little confused by what is the right bandwidth, because we don't have ATM to everybody's homes yet. Do you really need video for collaboration, or can you make do with audio? And then there's is ISDN going to make it, or will it be submerged? Will cable modems become relevant technology? There are a lot of concurrent developments, which are infrastructure issues. Will the cable companies win, or will the telephone companies win, or will the satellite companies win? So all of these make this a relatively confused field. I think most of the one successful company is this Progressive Systems, which has the real audio technology, which is interesting because that's successful because they built very robust, pretty robust at least technology for audio, which runs over 14.4 and 28.8 kilobaud modems. So this is universal technology, digital audio technology. All the more sophisticated approaches of this type, I believe, sort of up in the air because of these unknown infrastructure issues. I should point out, there's a magic word here called streaming. I mean, if you fetch an MPEG movie down from a web page, you download the movie and then play it. That is obviously an unreasonable way to do collaboration. You can't download the latest collaborative session and then play it. It's got to be done using streaming technology. And if you have a Hollywood movie, that's also got to be done using streaming technology. So all the important developments in digital audio and video is not download technology, it's streaming technology. Because nothing else makes is realistic for large files or collaborative things. So if you skip ahead, you'll find this file, which you've seen before. So we've sort of done this, you see. We've done Windows and then now we're up to services. Next file. Now, services aren't terribly well defined, because as I mentioned, services are just generic applications. So whether something's an application or a service isn't so obvious. Basically, an application is a service if it gets reused multiple times. So we've already discussed Netscape and Microsoft and others and IBM will fight out the website publishing world. Information delivery, including digital archive, digital video, etc. That's an important service, which, as we mentioned, is a little unclear at the moment. Commerce technology is, in some sense, a service, in that then once you have commerce technology and security technology, then you can build a lot of other applications. Next file. We've done collaboration as a service, so I call collaboration a service because it can be applied in so many different applications. But a core technology such as Habanero or Tango would get reused in these different applications. So Habanero or Tango is a service. Using Tango for command and control or the Virtual University is an application. So I would say meta computing or web-based computing is a service which you can then build various different applications of. You can build the application to manufacturing, distributed manufacturing, would use the meta computing web service. I'm going to skip over this. I'm skipping quite a long way ahead. In fact, I'm going to go to this one. But these foils are in your page. So here's we did an analysis for NASA of the role of the NII or the requirements of the NII to build to do future aerospace manufacturing. And so what I would claim one had to do was, when you were doing that, looking at that application, you want to try to understand all these various web capabilities or web services and technologies and see what's special about this application. So obviously it has collaboration. So you have engineers in one place collaborating with engineers in another place. It's not so obvious that collaboration is terribly different from collaboration needed to support, say, the DOE labs or the virtual research environment in general. It needs meta computing. There's some scale issues and security issues there. One extremely important capability, which is probably different from most, is configuration control. A typical, at least in the military aircraft, the way they told me they operated is they have this central database. So at the beginning of the month, you have a sort of state for the aircraft. You then go out and explore various optimizations for a month, and then you coordinate again and you freeze. This is the aircraft, and you keep going like that. So because you want an aircraft at the end, which is a complex system of interlinked parts which must work together, coordination is far more important than in many web applications. Many web applications tend to be very loosely synchronized. So here we have an example. A particularly critical feature is distributed, coordinated, configuration-controlled databases. And that finally is terribly difficult to do that, but it is a feature of this application which is not seen in other applications. Next file. So this file gives some sort of numbers which I thought were quite interesting. So this scopes out the problem. So the top bullet tells you who I worked with in trying to do this, various industries. And we were particularly looking at a so-called multidisciplinary optimization system, which happened to be called ASOP, but that wasn't very, the particular details were not important. So I found the scope of the problem which they articulated to me is quite interesting, namely, the collaboration is actually quite big, namely, as you know, not so many aircraft are being built by the military these days, maybe no aircraft, but certainly not very many. And so any actual aircraft is going to be built as a collaboration between several large companies. So you're going to have, an estimate of six major companies. The 777, Boeing 777 had 20,000 suppliers, which and so you have some large so if you thought about this in terms of cyberspace, the virtual organization that you're going to have to support to manufacture an aircraft is pretty big and quite complex. So the number of people involved went from some 50 at the beginning to some 10,000 in the deployment, manufacturing and development phase. From the computing point of view, I found one number quite interesting, and that was that 10,000 programs were involved in designing an aircraft. Now you say, how could you possibly build 10,000 programs? Well, this is a rather loose definition of a program. Namely, it would include your favorite parallel three-dimensional Navier-Stokes solver, but it would also include your Excel spreadsheet to optimize the placement of the inspection port for the maintenance crew. So this was a wide spectrum of so-called programs. And the other point about these programs is they're not independent, but they're also not tremendously synchronized. Namely, they're loosely synchronized through these databases. So actually, the web a web approach where you link various programs to get distributed programs together is quite relevant. So it also says there ain't no way you're going to be rewriting 10,000 programs in Java. So whatever system we're going to be doing better support existing legacy programs. That's why I would claim that the most interesting near-term development, something which I'll say because we're going to get to it, in the case of building Java environments for programming, is to build Java wrappers that we put around existing programs that allow us to access the internals of those programs. So to be preserved, these 10,000 working separate programs. I'm going to skip the next files, which describe the many months of work done by the industrial collaborators. Let me now basically finish this presentation, this morning presentation, by discussing various aspects of computing on the web. And so the various concepts, which we've essentially already mentioned already. So the first general idea is that we try to view parallel computing as a special case of distributed computing with low latency and tight synchronization. The critical idea of this sort of bottom-up approach, the use of the web for HPCC software infrastructure, is essentially software engineering. The claim would be that the web has the world's greatest information system, which information system is getting better and better. And the one thing we must get from the web is the ability to build software systems that are just much easier to use, which link information with computing, and that provide both, that's true for both the software development process and the software deployment process, the use of these programs. And, you know, that can be, I mean, a trivial example of software engineering and the development process. Many people have in fact, been implemented in Java, many by Sun, I believe, in their standard release, is that when you have programs, you can easily use web technology to effectively automatically generate hyperlinks for subroutine calls, which either take you back to where it was called or give you the documentation of the subroutine. So you can use hyperlinking technology to annotate programs to make the actual use of these programs, development of these processes, a much faster process. Now, I must admit, this field keeps changing, and my foils are always out of date. So I never say anything as precisely as I on these foils as I like. So the other thing we have to remember is the limitations of today's technology. Some of which are intrinsic, and some of which are not so intrinsic. Some of which are just accidents of the implementations. So there's some things you can do today with essentially no improvements of the technology. So, and this is what the last bullet said. So independent of whether or not we can use the web to do parallel CFD or what have you, we can undoubtedly use the web to do what I call embarrassingly parallel applications. That means when you have parallelism coming from essentially independent execution of different jobs. There's an example we'll do of the RSA factoring application, which one of some sort of which we did a year ago, and various Monte Carlo programs have some of that feature. So there's actually a lot of applications where the parallelism is essentially independent parallelism, for which therefore the bandwidth limitations of the web are not a serious problem. I once did a survey 7 years ago, which says that embarrassingly parallel applications were 10% of all parallel applications. I don't know if that's true, but they're neither zero nor dominant. There's some modest number, interesting but modest number. There is another more important class of applications, which even subsumes the embarrassingly parallel applications, which I call coarse-grained software integration. So that's the class of application where you have a lot of components, modules, linked together in some fashion. So the manufacturing foils I skipped over had some examples of that, where you had a geometry module linked to a structural model, linked to a CFD module, linked to an optimization module, linked to an electromagnetic scattering module. Large modules. The web is suitable for that for two reasons. The web is naturally a data flow model, which is the natural model for such programming. And because it's coarse grain, that typically, it's not always true, but it's typically true that the communication needs, the communication over compute ratio is, tends to be small for such large module integration. This is task parallelism, if you like. But and so I would, whereas when you have, you know, if you're doing the inner loop of your CFD program, that you're sending small messages, you need low latency, and that's very different from a whole CFD program sending data to a structural program, which is huge messages, latency doesn't really matter, bandwidth may matter, depends on the application. So I would claim that today, and this is sort of what we're trying to do with this project called Webflow, which you were handed a sent a more up-to-date handout on. Everybody, you gave everybody a Webflow, Merrick? They should all have this. So Webflow is meant to be coarse-grained software integration slash data flow using web technology. And I would claim, I wouldn't claim we'll succeed, but I would claim that's a reasonable idea, because it's not automatically vetoed by the features of the web. Whereas I think it's sort of obvious that we can't do the innards of a CFD program at the moment using this technology. At least not in the way we want to use Webflow. Next file. All right, so this gives you a bunch of URLs, of which the top one is the most important. This web-based HPCC URL is meant to have all the projects we've tried and failed or stopped and started and still going, where we're trying to use web technology in computing. This CareWeb one is this database project I mentioned. Next, so this this gives you various, this yet again makes some general comments. So these files are not organized as well as I would like. It's because this field and what we do keeps changing so rapidly. Alright. So we already mentioned embarrassingly parallel. In the general area of coarse-grained software integration, there is one obvious example, which I forgot to mention in my coarse-grained integration, that's linking a database with a compute engine. So I won't go into a detail, but an example we built once was financial modeling on demand, where the database has stock prices and your big compute engine, which might run on a parallel, which actually did run on a parallel machine, access that database using web technology, and then it actually ran as a standard MPI parallel program on the SP2. So an example of coarse-grained integration is where one of the modules is a database. Now, Java can be used in actually three different ways. The one way, which I will not, I think, discuss anymore, because I did it already, was Java for scientific computing. So this is Java as the programming language for everything. That's one application of Java, which is not the deployment application of today, but will be, in my opinion, the deployment application probably 3 to 5 years from now, that's, I guess. Possibly my optimistic, that's my estimate for when the next generation of children will come into schools knowing Java so fluently they will use it for everything. The next application of Java is as a user interface. Now that I view as a highly promising use of Java that we can do today, and includes within it this concept of Java as a wrapper, user wrapper. So actually my model for getting traditional Fortran programmers and C++ programmers to use Java is to build them the Java wrapper and And they sit there tweaking that program from their Java, doing their visualization from their Java front end, and then they have to improve the back end. And they'll start off improving their Fortran, and then they'll move to improving their writing it all in Java once the Java compilers get good enough and they become fluent enough with Java. So I see that's a natural way of doing it, doing this. We've already mentioned Java servers, which is essentially the way we implement Webflow. So this is Java as the coordination entity, the session management software to implement essentially AVS on the web, which is what Webflow is. Now, something we've deployed today is what I call HPF or MPI on the web, and that is actually even simpler. That is what I would say is using web windows for HPF or MPI. So that's saying just build a web client interface to existing technologies. And let's ignore the last bullet, which is just one particular example, which is building. When you look at these Java interfaces, you can obviously build so-called problem-solving environments. Many people have done this. So you can make domain-specific front ends, and we happen to be building one for adaptive mesh refinement. Next file. All right, so we've seen this before. So this is our strategy. We've done this one before. Next file. Let's skip this one. All right, so let me briefly mention this application we did, factorization on the web. Next file. So this we demonstrated a year ago. And all you need to know about this problem, so this is the problem of factoring large numbers. And the only important, computationally off of the web, the only really important point is that this is embarrassingly parallel and does not have substantial communication needs between servers and clients. Obviously, you could have if it was embarrassingly parallel but needed an enormous amount of data to go back and forth between the jobs and some sort of accumulation engine, then you would be in bad trouble. This one does not require that. And so it uses, this was done with the people who I believe have the best algorithms in the world to do this. And actually, we have not started RSA 155 because they've not delivered the correct algorithm to do that yet. So RSA 130 we did corresponds to 130 decimal digits. Next file. So the level of parallelism here is a few million. So that's the level of embarrassingly parallelism. So there's plenty of parallelism. It was implemented as a linked set of servers, which then implemented with clients. We actually learned some lessons from this, which basically getting implemented by, well, the one project I'm most familiar with is a project called ARMS at Cornell by Dave Lifka, who is building essentially a web-based resource management system. So this is to manage linked computing resources. This is not a programming environment, but a management environment. And our hardest problem with the RSA 130 and its deployment was the logistics, where we really allowed to use this workstation. And the standard things done by Piranha and Condor and things like that, those that management functions, we did not do well in our implementation. But I believe that there's going to be a new generation of professional web-based management systems which will put that in properly. And there's at least one such, and I'm sure there are other such projects looking into that. Because it's not difficult, it just needs more infrastructure and a greater attention to detail that these ideas had been addressed in some of the many cluster management systems that exist. Next file. Alright, so this file here, we can, this actually, let's ignore this file, because this is basically out of date now. This was the old way we did, and this file, let's ignore it. These are the implementation we did at the time, a year ago, but you know, the web has moved so fast, and you know, with the time we wrote those files, there were not any Java servers, so that's life, you see. By the way, and of course, it is one of the sort of obvious things about using the web, which I think is relatively important, but is that because the web moves so rapidly, you need to be very careful to put your investment in a way it's not wasted. So a lot of your time in web technology is sitting there listening to the drumbeat of the web, trying to work out which way it's going to go, and trying to choose a strategy that has some, which is not going to be totally made irrelevant by future developments, and will basically have some hope of surviving in some fashion, whatever's going on. So I would say we put a lot of activity into such listening to the drumbeat of the web. The software was actually written by Jim Coey of Cooperating Systems, who works with Marina Chen. It was quite an amusing application. It was truly heterogeneous. The smallest system we used was an i386 laptop, and including and the largest an IBM SP2. The software was just written in native fashion. It was C software, which was compiled on the server and placed on the server for each of these systems. So this was a very clumsy technology. It was not some nifty Java applet, which you probably didn't want it to be, because this you must have running very fast, because this is computationally extremely intense. So this is not an example of something you do as a Java applet. You could have a framework as a Java applet, but the actual code that's going to run and do the factoring analysis, that better run as fast as possible, because we want to, this is a very intense computation. So that, even if we wrote it in Java, we would have to run native Java compilers. It was actually written in C. Next file. Okay, so we can. So these are basically capabilities of a lot of. So this was done as CGI. This is this is probably how you would do this probably today if you had to do it today. So this is just Perl CGI scripts, a few thousand lines of code. And these are basically largely management services. So I say this, the abstraction of this project is web-based cluster meta-computing management, which I would claim is, my list of things you can do, I would claim you can clearly use the web to build wonderful cluster management software and meta-computing management as opposed to programming environment. And that is happening now in at least one place and presumably more. So we're not working in that area anymore because it doesn't seem to be an easy place to make research-wise unique comments. So this was the C client code, which was downloaded. Maybe nowadays you should make it a plugin or something. Next file. And this is the answer. So you have to multiply those numbers together by the end of the lecture, or else you won't be allowed to leave. Prove that you get the thing. So anyway, that's the factorization of this 130-digit number there, which was finished on April 10th. Next file. Yes, well, the only amusing thing, so this is give you a little bit of light relief. So these people we worked with set up a DigiCrime homepage, and the key person is, instead of having a chief scientist, you have a thief scientist and stuff like that. So this is quite an amusing page. Next file. All right, so So I don't really want to spend much. Well, let's see. I don't think I want to spend. I don't think there's much to learn from this, which we haven't already said. So let's make some remarks on an area which I would view as pretty important today, because I see no reason why you can't just do this in dozens and dozens of cases. But basically, remember, Java is a client-side technology, and it has wonderful graphics. So what we're doing here is just using Java applets to build user interfaces. This I view as a good industry, because you can build very quickly extremely sophisticated user interfaces, and we will see what we'll see. So next file. So what I have here. All right. So let's skip over this one. I want to come back to, I'm not certain what I'm doing here. All right. This is something nobody can see. I have this on foils. So I'm just going to show a couple of these foils on Webflow. Maybe we can go back one on that foil. I apologize. I think I will look at that. Go back one. Hit previous. So I'm sorry, these foils are a little out of order. I didn't realize. So put curly brackets around those comments about Java's user interface. This is not Java's user interface, really, although it uses Java in its implementation as a user interface. So the basic, one of the, if you talk about web computing, then effectively you're going to end up generating these compute nets. So you're going to generate, as I already mentioned, I think right at the beginning, any parallel machine in this model, whether it be a set of workstations, set of PCs, or a tightly coupled machine, ought to have in this model a server running on each node. And those servers are the compute nets. So the model we have, and so in some sense they replace in PVM, instead of having a PVM daemon, we're having a nifty Java server as our controller on each node. And you'll see a nice example of that later on, when we see our interface to Pablo, which is a performance visualization system, where one of the nice things you can do this in real time, you can have data transferred from the node program hanging off the server to the server, then you use conventional web technology to grab the information from the server, and then in real time you can display visualization of performance or other data from your server. So that's an example of how you can use such compute nets to give you a much better programming environment. Now, so if you now come to this, so you've seen lots of these silly diagrams, and they all look the same. That's the problem. That's why I don't want to discuss them too much. Can we turn off? Go to the next file, which is white, and then we won't notice it. I don't know how to turn this. Fine. Good. All right. So, Right, so what this is meant to be a model of, this is meant to, this sort of symbolic picture is meant to point out how if you took a Java server model, you can imagine all the various services that you want to build computing is essentially implemented as a set of modules or servlets. It's part of, to be added onto this server. And here are illustrated three components that you would want. You would want the so-called session manager, which is the cluster management software, to tell the system what to do, which programs, which machines to use, etc. You'd want to establish connections between the different servers in the compute net, so that's the connection manager. And then you want the module manager, which is essentially the library system, to go and grab the data, the program, and get it brought in as a servlet so that you can then run it. So this is a typical example of a relatively advanced, because you use one of these Java servers, Java server-based Webflow implementation. As I say, Webflow is unfortunately a moving target, because when we wrote the foils even 9 months ago, the first servers only came out in June. This was Jigsaw. And so basically starting then, we rethought the implementation of Webflow to maybe, instead of being a CGI script-based system, to make it a Java server-based system. And that may only, you know, that's a problem. But this, so this is an example of where this field, where we are, our work is being impacted by changes. So this foil here, which you, I'm not certain if it's in the handout. I think it is.
It is
in this document, yes. So I like this foil, which we keep updating, which points out InfoSpheres is a Caltech distributed computing project. Jigsaw must be Sunsoft, Netscape is Netscape, JavaSoft is JavaSoft, Habanero is NCSA. And they point out that this is a very confused world at the moment. I mean, some people, and so there are a lot of, I mean, there's some nice names like Java Bean. So what is a Java Bean? So it's a module which is bigger than an applet. So. And at least it sounds nice. And I like the concept of linking together a bunch of Java beans. That's sort of neat. So what is this pointing out? So it points out that all the various components that you need to build distributed information and distributed computing systems, they exist in different fashions in these various systems, and nobody quite knows at the moment what the reasonable way to go is. Say, our current choice, I believe, is to use Jigsaw, which is the MIT Java server. But, you know, obviously, there's a lot of commercial and other forces tending to pull different things in different ways. The basic concepts are not going to depend on these particular technologies. Next foil. Is this still? All right. Let's continue. Let's get through. Let's go next foil. That's that wonderful foil we just had. Next foil. Alright, so, as I say, I apologize for the significant disorganization of these foils, which reflects the rapid change in this technology. You probably do not have this foil, because I only built this one recently. So this is yet another foil, which actually keeps, we keep discussing the same things from different points of view, because of this, maybe that's okay, because in this field, different things are emerging from different points of view. So this tells you something about Java as a the nature of parallelism in Java. So here I've written down four forms of parallelism. Classic data parallelism, you know, favorite particle dynamics PDE problem. Modest grain size functional parallelism, such as in the overlap of communication and computation and parallel I/O. Object parallelism, as seen in distributed simulation and classic object-oriented computing. Coarse grain software integration, which is here called meta problems. So I would claim that Java does two with the applet mechanism. Three is basically Java objects or applets again. Four is this thing which could be Java beans or some equivalent technology. It's basically the web model. So I would claim that Java has automatically three of these four forms of parallelism. It does not support data parallelism in Java. But if you compare with Fortran, at least, Fortran supports one in HPF. It does not support naturally at least two through four. Next file. So here's basically some comments here about Java and, data parallelism. So I would claim that introducing data parallelism into Java is basically the same as introducing data parallelism into C++ or Fortran. It's sort of no harder or no easier. Namely, in the good old days, I mean, in the old days, we only used Fortran plus message passing or C plus message passing. So today we use Java plus message passing. I think this file is not in your set, I'm sorry. So I would claim Java plus message passing, and we have demos of that which you can see at our booth or during lunch, is quite straight, you know, I mean it's not trivial, but it's here today. Java plus message passing is intrinsic to all these collaborations. You can use it to do simulations today. So there is no problem with Java plus message passing. You might not have the right performance with the current libraries, but I see that as sort of a trivial, as far as I know, that's a relatively trivial implementation issue of today. There's nothing, it's as good or as bad as Fortran, C or C++ plus message passing. The only difficult part of Java is the same thing that's pretty hard in Fortran or C++, which is high-level data parallel model. Next file. Oh, what's this? Oh, well, this is this interface which to this Java plus message passing. Next, you don't have this one. Next file. This is just a simple interface to set up this simple game of life running in parallel under Java plus message passing. Next file. And there's the display of the game of life with the four Java processes. So this is some relatively, historically rather simple standard domain decomposition of a two-dimensional grid under four processors with local communication between the processors. So that's done using Java plus message passing in the same way that we would have done, that we did, you know, people did 15 years ago, similar examples in C and Fortran. Next file. Yeah, so, all right, so here's a useful URL. And if you don't have this URL, I have some pieces of paper with this URL. This is, we had a study of data parallel Java, and I will also have a handout for my Birds of the Feather on Java for Scientific Computing, which will have this URL, which is a study of what I call HP Java I define to be data parallelism in Java, which I would claim to be non-trivial because it's non-trivial in Fortran and C++. I'm not saying that Fortran plus message, Java plus message passing is trivial. It's just that I see it obviously works. It has the pluses and minuses of C and Fortran plus message passing. It might have some advantages, but the actual message passing and which applications work and how easy it is to use and whether it's too low level, that's no difference really between Java and Fortran and C. Next file. So, hearing me. All right, we need to. So, I happen to have a prejudice as to how to do, which may or may not be the correct prejudice, but if we haven't done it, I can't claim to, in detail, I can't claim to prove this. But we once built a high-performance Fortran interpreter. The reason we built a high-performance Fortran interpreter was that we noticed that was a little like APL. If you look at APL as an interpreted language, the reason it makes sense to do APL or MATLAB as an interpreted language is that the thing you're interpreting are large grain size, they're arrays. So in HPF, there's a thing called an array. I mean, obviously, a lot of the parallelism is built around arrays, at least in the Fortran 90 version thereof. So there is some synergy between this concept of Java wrappers and the concept of building an interpreted interface, which actually could be an interface, a Java interface to HPF, which essentially allows you to manipulate the large grain size at the interpreted level objects. So you have sort of HPArray.matmul will multiply the large-scale objects B and C. It does that by invoking a native library, which is the, probably the C code, which does matrix multiplication. So that's our approach to doing visualization. You have a set of methods which are defined on high-performance Fortran arrays, which then allow you to access those methods, put them into plots, do new plotting, etc., and stuff like that. So the idea is to build an interpreted veneer around running existing high-performance programs which have methods that either invoke high-performance runtime library or extract information from the running program. So here we really would like JavaScript. We'd much rather have a purely interpreted interface than this semi-interpreted interface. This is an example where we want a computer-oriented, fully interpreted language, which I'm sure will happen. Next file. It just not exists yet. Next file, we don't need that. We have to move on. All right, so I apologize to NIST. Anyway, you handed out a standard. This one didn't have the right contrast. Anyway, they have, NIST has a neat web interface to the their SP2, which here is a screen dump thereof. The contrast could be better. Next, well, that's my fault. Next file. There's a poster exhibit, so, and you can find out from... So here you can find, I don't know why I did this one, I noticed there was a special interface to Gaussian 90 and things like that. So, well maybe I'm wrong, I would view this as a nice example of the web Windows approach. You build a beautiful web, a very powerful web API, which takes a lot of the pain away from using these complex systems. Next file. Here, Gaussian 94, submit Gaussian 94 job. Alright, so this is a so there's a good page there which you can find out. Next file. If you read the latest Cornell Theory Center, could you scan that down? Just do here. So obviously this is on the web, so you can read it better on the web. This is a description of the Cornell effort called ARMS. RMS is Resource Management System. I forget what the A is. But this is this web-based distributed management system. It's built off some technology built by Dave Liftger when he was at Argonne and now at Cornell to schedule SP2s. and he's extended it to schedule a distributed set of systems, and he's built in various security systems, another Java front end, which has happened to be built by one of our students, and so on. But anyway, there's an article in the Cornell Theory Center Forefront that came a few days ago. Next file. All right, so this file here, which probably, I forget whether this one's in your handout. So this is a similar example, similar concept. This is this web Windows interface to high performance Fortran. So my class this semester, computational science, the students are not allowed to log into a real computer. They only log into the web. So this is the idea of web Windows. You only see the web client. And it has, because they log into the web, they automatically get a bunch of buttons with predefined HPF programs, etc., and it will automatically compile and run the program on a suitable set of workstations. So this, the idea is to lower the threshold of pain for the user by trying to give a richer set of information resources and and a universal interface which they can access. Next file. And the same technology has been improved by Cornell and made more secure to use as a front end to their SP2. And they were used, so they took that from Kivang Dinso, as my student will give a talk at this conference. He built this. So his thesis is meant to be on virtual programming lab technologies. So I would view this as if you thought, again, we're trying to put universities out of business, so we need to have not only virtual classrooms, but virtual programming labs. So this is a virtual programming lab. And that's what I would claim his thesis is. It's the technology aimed at educational applications, which has just a different performance and functionality trade-off from production applications. So again, the same issue of Forefronts has a discussion of the so-called HPF virtual workshop that Cornell is building, which the practical, the lab sessions for this, this workshop are using this technology. Next file. So that's the Cornell version of the interface. Next file. My impression is this whole projective lost some of its contrast. Never mind. Next file. What? Yes. Another example of this is the NCSA Biology Workbench, which is a rich web interface to a whole set of biology programs. I would view that as a pretty interesting, it's a web, it's a sort of customized set of interfaces to a large amount of public domain databases and programs for biology. So this is a pretty sophisticated example of using the web's information and compute capability. But notice there's no, this is coarse grain integration. All this is not, in the case of the HPF interface, the HPF did its own thing and actually could do its own thing without us worrying about the web. Here, this web interface is coarse grain software integration. We're not running parallelism, it's just linking PCs to databases as compute engines. You're doing what I claim you can do. You can use the web to do coarse grain software integration. And you can do it to use user interfaces to fine-grain applications. Those are both very good applications of the web today, which are insensitive to any deficiencies. Next file. All right, so this is yet another example built by one of my students who's actually going to Argonne National Lab. So he built this is a NASA Grand Challenge of data dissimulation. His work on it is finished. It was the first round of it. So he built a Java front end, a Solia user interface, allowing the user to specify which programs run on which computers with which data sets. So here's a graphical front end, which links, when you look in detail, you'll find some of those are programs, some of them are computers, and some of them are data sets. Next file. If you click on these on the program modules links, you get the programs. If you click on the data links, you get the data. If you can then select, you get told which programs exist for which computers. So this is an example of simply using the web information capabilities to provide a more attractive environment, in this case to build distributed environments. So this is actually a very similar to a specialized application of AVS, if you like, network editing to link to build distributed applications. Next file. So we should be nearly finished, I think. So here's a better, because it's larger, an example of if you click on on a particular link. Next file. Here shows you how it tells you for a program, for this particular program, some features about it. Whether it exists for various particular computers and so on, and how it was compiled and stuff like that. So that you just get these screens when you click on the corresponding icon in that network diagram we showed at the beginning. Next file. Yeah, next file. There are too many of these. Right, next file. Next file. We're nearly finished. We have to finish. All right, so this, maybe I'll finish here. All right, so this is coming back to Kivangintza's thesis on virtual programming technologies. So this is work in progress. So many of you may know Dan Reed's very nice system called Pablo for visualizing the performance of running programs. So we built a sort of web interface to Pablo, so which takes Pablo data, and then Kivang's built 16 Java applets, which basically takes the Pablo data as input and then produces these graphical displays on your screen. So our model for the virtual programming lab is you submit it using some sort of web Windows interface. You then have these, you then can actually have two implementations. You can either come from a client-based or server-based. It's not quite clear which is the best way to do it. But then you can access the data either from the performance data or the scientific visualization data. So he has a Java plotting package for the scientific visualization data. So you can then use Java it's lucky. MPAC's gone to lunch, so you have to go to lunch. So he is. So the idea is that you can then hand these. So the idea is there's going to be a growing number of Java resources for graphics, plotting, and etc. And by linking such capabilities to running programs, we should be able to produce a much better environment for the user, especially for the beginning user. So, all right, so as I said, this afternoon, Dave Warner was here a few seconds ago. Here he is at the back. So we're going to talk about healthcare applications and user interfaces and special novel user interfaces for very high information throughput, which you need for large-scale applications. And so that will be the first part of this afternoon. Thank you.